I'm Carol Bakirita. I'm from the Bay Area, but I've been living in LA for a bit now, and came up for the Jazz Week convention and also the San Jose Jazz Festival, and to be around this great group of folks dedicated heart and soul to jazz.
When did you get into it? What drew you to jazz?
Oh my goodness, I started singing. I sort of erupted in song, so I would say sophomore year of high school. Before that, music was my mom's thing, and it was kind of, I don't know, you know, the decisions you make as a child, oh, I can't share it, or that's where mom goes for solace or whatever. But she had a lot of great records. She had a lot of jazz, she had a lot of Ella, she had a lot of Jobim, she had a lot of Brazilian stuff. And I guess I was just soaking it up, and suddenly I went to a teeny tiny high school that didn't have a music department. And one day I just erupted in song and I couldn't shut up. And it came out, people said, oh, you're a jazz singer. And I said, oh, yeah, I guess I'm a jazz singer. It just, the way I heard things, the way I phrased things, the way I flipped things around. And then from that point on, I was singing. I went and did a very academic major at university, but I kept singing on the side and did Monterey Jazz Festival a couple of years running and then moved to Europe. There was much more happening there. I could sing. All I wanted to do was bebop. I didn't want to do Proud Mary at weddings. I didn't have a pop cell in my body. I just heard jazz. So.
Was your mom happy when you started singing the music of her records?
She's thrilled now, many, many years later. And I would say she was happy then, but I think that it was her dream at the time. You know, if you asked her at the time, she would have said she was thrilled. But there was still a sense that of loss for her that she didn't do it, you know. So when I would do gigs, I would bring her up, you know, to do a tune or two, and then she would stay and do a whole bunch. But I would give her the Brazilian stuff, you know. I would have the guys do charts for her in her key of the Jobim tunes, and music was a great love for her growing up, and it was always in the house for us. But it wasn't the way most people come up, learning piano, all making music together. So, but she's very happy now. She's my biggest fan. She comes to all my shows. She's very, very big support.
So how did you end up in France and places like that singing?
I ended up in France. Funny enough, my father's father is from Barcelona, and he had found the town where his relatives were and organized a family reunion. And so a whole bunch of us went to Spain. And after that, I had a friend playing Dizzy Gillespie in his 70th anniversary big band. And he said, come hang out. We'll be in Montreux. And I went, okay. You know, I was young enough to go, yeah, hang out. No strings attached. Hang out with the band. What fun. And it was a gas. We traveled all through Spain, and I interpreted for them. And at the end of that, I ended up in Paris all by myself. And everywhere I looked, there was a jazz club. Every corner had a jazz club and a chocolate store. Hello? You know, it's like, obviously, this is the place where I'm supposed to be, and I had a place to stay for 2 weeks if I came back. Went back to Oakland, closed up my apartment, moved to France, and suddenly realized that I didn't speak a word of French. It wasn't something I thought about beforehand. You just think about the goal. And just made it work. Started sitting in all over town and singing, and ended up 3 years in Paris and sang a lot in northern Italy. I used to tour with guys there.
So when you went to Paris the first time, you said you didn't know anybody. You were alone. I mean, most people at that point would be like, I don't know anybody. I'm this is over. I mean, how hard was it to start, like get the first gig and make the first friend?
You know, those times in your life when you have no doubt, when your vision is clear, you just make it happen. I can't really explain it. I got the Pariscope, the little magazine of what's happening every week, and I sort of figured out the letters and names. And in those days, we didn't have the smartphones and GPS and all that, so you had the little booklet of streets. How to get around Paris. It's the only place in my life that I have no sense of direction. I can always tell you north, south, east, west, except in Paris, because it's built like a caracol, like a snail, around and around and around. And I just started sitting in. just went to a club, and, you know, I had that, what was I, 22? No doubt in my mind I was on this earth to sing jazz, and I just started gigging, started getting work.
You do realize, though, that some people never have that fearlessness ever, you know what I mean?
I wish I still had it. It ebbs and flows in life, yeah. You know?
What about right now? Like, where are you right now on the fearlessness chart?
I'm gearing back up. How's that? I had a kind of strange year. I made a record, let's see, how do I keep this clean? I wanted to say behind, backward, like when you do things backward, leading with your behind. Most people, before they put out a record, they have a game plan, they have a tour set up, the publicist sets things up, and I didn't really have a game plan. It felt like time to do a record. Finally, the way I hear things, and people were asking me about the cover. I was just sitting, you know, I'm very camera shy, and there's this one photographer that I love to work with, and we just usually shoot. He'll come to town. He wants to learn how to teach samba dance, Brazilian samba. So we'll trade, and I teach him dance, and then we go and shoot something. So it's not with the, this is the album cover, this is the headshot, which is a lot of pressure for pictures if you're camera shy. So I was just sitting on the front steps and gathered up this huge dress and was waiting for him to load up the car and get it together. So then he turned around and shot a few pictures, and that's the cover. And it was like, here I am on my front steps, minha casa, my house, comfortable in my skin, hearing nobody telling me how I'm supposed to do this song or that song, or you can't do this one Brazilian, or, you know, you have to flip it around, or something came out with sort of an Afro-Peruvian 6'8 feel, and that was great. It wasn't, nobody was saying you can't do that, or, you know, you have to do 3-2 clave instead of 2 clave. It's like, no, I hear it this way. So we just, the guys were great. It was the greatest group of guys in town, beautiful musicians who both understood Brazilian, the whole wide world of Brazilian music. Not just jazz, bossa nova is a beautiful animal, but it's one animal in a giant menagerie. You know, there's samba reggae, maracatu, choro. There are a million types of rhythms and combinations. So this album was with people, a lot of the guys had played with Sergio Mendes for years and had sort of the whole understanding of Brazilian music, and swinging straight ahead players. Just really fun. And the album, Mike Carlson took it around to radio stations, got a lot of airplay, and I'm really grateful. K-Jazz in Los Angeles is still playing it almost every day. And I just don't have a clear, I've been waiting to have a clear vision of what I want to do with it and where I want to go. And I feel like I'm in a cocoon and it's going to open this year. You're my morning coffee, it's absolutely true. I get all caffeinated just looking at you. Something in the way you say hello makes my engine go just like a cup of joe. Triple shot.